Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The V&T.
QNL.
With guest co-host, Jonah Falcon.
I learned from the internet that if you say fact at the end of anything you say, that it is in fact a fact. It's great how that works.
That's awesome. I'll try sometime.
I don't make mistakes. Fact. Tony, you're going to hear the intro theme to the show, and then start with the introduction.
I can just see it now. The intro theme is going to be advice. It's my card. No. Don't do it.
This is what happens when we let Dan guess another podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 141. I am Jonah Falcon. We also have Daniel Quick.
God save the kings.
Yeah, Lisa Bang.
Whoa!
Philip Gilu.
Andy and Alden seemed to think the idea.
And Makalua.
Better than kings. Gods. Are we supposed to know what game that is?
Actually, I thought it was going to be Gods versus Kings, in which you sort of like a fighting game.
No, I mean what I said. It was from an old game. Right, that game is old school now. I feel old. That game was that long ago.
What game?
Deus Ex.
Oh, yeah. We're all excited. As a matter of fact, we all had to take our lithium because there's going to be a new expansion coming out this spring called Civilization V: Gods and Kings. It's going to cost roughly
$29.99.
Well, I was thinking actually more of like $299. I was thinking, well, that's the thing that'll come with an entire new PC with it.
When you said $2.99, you interpret that as, oh, I accidentally said $299. I heard $2.99, and I heard $2.99, and so did Backy, and... That's funny. There's a cultural statement somewhere, but we don't care about those things on the show. So we'll talk about the expansion pack some more.
Well, it's going to obviously feature religion. It's going to include a new diplomacy revamp. It's going to come with 9 new civs, 9 new wonders, 27 new units, 13 new buildings, of course, new techs, new natural wonders. It's going to add 2 new city-state types, the espionage, and also there's rumored to be 3 scenarios.
Yeah, one of them's supposed to be a Victorian science fiction setting. That's going to be interesting.
Steampunk.
Yeah, I don't know why they said Victorian science fiction without saying steampunk. Like,
exactly.
Have a trademark on that or something?
Well, you know what? To be fair, not all steampunk is Victorian, for one. There's also a fall of Rome likely scenario between the Celts and Carthage. And there's also a named medieval era scenario that will probably feature Byzantine. And Byzantine was confirmed, so it's even more likely. Religion is coming back, and the last time we saw it was Civ 4 Beyond the Sword, I believe.
Yay.
You're so excited.
That's
okay. That's just well, religious blocks all over again. Everybody gets the same religion. You got stuck with the wrong one. You're going to get dog trials. I can see it happening already.
Well, you could always call your religion, the Flying Spaghetti Monster or the Cult of Cthulhu.
Yeah. I do see that we can customize it. I like that.
But here's essentially how it works. Your civilization starts with certain beliefs, and the beliefs that you pick, no one else can pick. So, say you want something that increases your military ability or in some way, no one else can pick it. At some point, when you gain enough faith, you can actually found the religion. According to one of the developers, in the early game, religion is very important. As a matter of fact, you go to war over religion. You say, hell, you worship a different god? You must die.
Then, the stupid feathered bird serpent and not the flying spaghetti monster? Oh, you gotta die.
And then around the Renaissance, it changes, and it becomes more of cities that are your religion are less resistant to you invading. They want to join you more, but it isn't something that you'll go to war over. I'm enthusiastic because one of the things that bothered me about Civilization V was sort of dry. You know, I mean, you could get aspects for your civilization using city-states and policies and all that stuff. but everybody could do it. Here, they're forcing some individuality. You know, if you pick a religion that is all sunshiny and, you know, we get sign bonuses and we get happiness bonuses, while the other person picks, okay, we're going to take the war religion, you know, we're going to increase our armies, we're going to make it easier for us to take over. So, you know, it adds a little bit of spice.
Like the added strategy, it really depends on implemented how good it's going to be.
Preset religions that are going to be included are Buddhism, Christianity, Confucianism, Hinduism, Islam, Judaism, Shintoism, Sikhism, Taoism, Tengrism, and Zoroastrianism.
Oh, wait a second. So, like, are these customized, like, to the level that you can customize your own religion? Because I can see so many, you know, I mean, one thing about religion is before is that each religion, even though they had different texts that got them, like, there was nothing really essentially different about each, you know, each religion. It was just which one that you chose.
No, I think the only difference between these guys is that they each have their own little symbol. Just like Civilization IV, the thing is they're avoiding controversy by allowing you to customize your own religion so that they can't say that they're biased against one religion because they did these stats and they're biased against that religion. Yeah, so it's basically you make your own religion.
So the bias would be towards creating your own religion, wouldn't it? I mean, if the preset religions didn't have any traits, what would be the point of choosing one of them?
Well, if you ever wanted to have a bloodthirsty Buddhism, go right ahead.
All right, I mean...
yeah, that actually happened to China for a little while.
I mean, of course, everybody can understand the rationale in Civ 4 for making all the religions pretty much the same with a couple minor differences, but I think that, you know, for any of these, you know, preloaded religions to have any sort of strength, you need to have the traits that any other customizable religion would have, and that would get us into hot water, I feel.
You're actually starting from a primitive, you know, idol-worshipping, non-denominational religion that eventually blooms into whatever religion you want it to be. You can actually pick a religion based on the way you think you're going to do it. Like, if you think that you're going to be a peaceful civilization and you're going to go that route, you'll just pick Buddhism as your name because, you know, it sounds better.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that, like, since religions can be customizable in terms of, you know, how much it benefits, for example, your military, then, you know, like, if a preloaded religion were, for example, like pegged as one religion that you would pick if you wanted to be good at killing other people, then I expect that some people of those religions will not be happy about being characterized as warlike.
The common issue was diplomacy, and that was the common issue in Civ 4. But you know, I don't know how that's going to be in Civ 5. Like, a lot of this, when they show the features, they don't really show the nitty-gritty, the balance, and everything else that goes into the features that could make them either amazing or terrible. So it's hard to say, but you know, at least for the religion, the way they have it showing up, it's promising. And I do agree that it should not be an overriding factor. That's something that in previous games, some of their expansion content really became overriding factors. That would include the Apostolic Palace, that would include Vassal States. So we'll see. We'll see how they do it with the religion.
Well, at least it's forcing differentiality. As we said before, everybody could get the same civics if they wanted to. Here, you're forcing people into making decisions. When someone takes a trait of a religion, no one else can have that trait. Period. End of story.
And that's not bad, except for that if one of the traits is too much better than the others, then the game becomes too much of a race to get that one trait. You know, I'm not saying that's the case, but you know, if it is the case, then that's the way it's going to go, and that's going to need to be patched, and it's going to need to be patched very quickly if it turns out to be the case.
They do hint at some of the stuff that'll be some of the traits. They say religious idols, +1 gold and +1 faith for each gold and silver tile. God of the sea, production into fish tiles. Stone circle, faith from stone tiles. Ceremonial burial, +1 happiness for each city that follows your religion. Church property, +2 gold for each city that follows your religion. Defender of the faith, +20% combat bonus when near friendly cities that follow your religion. Flourishing of the arts, +10% culture when not at war. Initiation rites, 100 gold bonus when your city first switches to your religion. Just war, 20% combat bonus when near enemy cities that follow your religion.
And those first three that you mentioned, the religious idols, gods of the sea, and stone circle, have been identified as pantheon beliefs. Excuse me, so this is what you would start out as your primitive religion, and then the ceremonial burial, church property, defender of the faith, flourishing of the arts, initiation rites, and just war are world religion beliefs if you continue down that religious path. We've also seen for pantheon beliefs, goddess of the hunt, which gives some kind of food bonus. or a holy order for world religion, which allows the purchase of missionaries to help spread your religion, and tithing, receive gold from all cities following that religion, friend or foe. So you're having to make these decisions, yes, and it's looking like from Pantheon release, for example, religious idols, going back to that, plus one gold and plus one faith for each gold and silver tile. If you're looking at your nearby terrain and you don't have any gold or silver, I mean, you could go ahead and adopt that Pantheon, but that's not going to help you in any way. And I think it's also actually to the point about it becoming an overriding aspect of diplomacy. There was an article on Cockatoo from Jason Schreier who writes, quote, relax, atheists, you won't have to use the religion system to progress in Civilization V Gods and Kings. You can go through the entire game without touching it. You might miss out on a few benefits, but you can safely ignore this new feature if you're feeling overwhelmed or faithless. By the time the end game rolls around, it won't be relevant anyway, unquote. And to that end, he quotes from Ed Beach, who's the lead designer on Gods and Kings, who said there's the religion game kind of happens through the first two-thirds of the game and then kind of naturally tapers out.
Now, there is one other aspect to religion, a major part that we haven't mentioned yet, and that is faith. And basically, it's sort of like you build culture, you can also build faith. And this faith can be used to purchase great people as well.
Well, really?
Yes.
I thought it would be to developing the religions themselves.
You could also call your religion atheism, just so you know, so you can be non-religious. You can call it atheism and go with that.
You can not get hiccups.
I mean, do you really need to have a religion? You know, I mean, an atheist may say, okay, we're going to have flourishing of the arts as an atheism because we don't, you know, we're not repressing art with naughty religion, that sort of stuff. So,
it's going to get really bad. Ideas of what you could call some of these religions, especially multiplayer games. But the ideas probably shouldn't be mentioned on a live show.
Well, I thought you were going to talk about cherry tapping with creating a bunch of great people with faith.
That might not wind up being cherry tapping. Great scientists are so good in Civ 5. That might actually be a viable strategy. We have to see.
When you strip this all away, by the way, you're basically adding another layer of numbers and modifiers. So you could always look at it from that standpoint, you know, if you really don't want to get into religion, you just think of it as, okay, well, there's a chance for me to get more, you know, ability to get great people faster and earn gold. Of course, where's the fun in that?
Yeah, that's true.
You have to be careful, though, because if that becomes consistently the best option, is a lot of Civ is that you're deciding between multiple choices that have differing returns, and, you know, sometimes you're also picking between something that gives you the return sooner versus later. But at the end of the day, you're going to be looking at, okay, what choice here gives me the most stuff, essentially, to put it in lay terms. It's just bulb. And religion might take a back seat when you get by text instead really quickly. You know, on top of the ones from the other great person pool.
How's that different from real life, though?
So, yeah. I'm just saying, if it's too strong, if anyone else is too strong, that's a problem. But, you know, again, we're saying this right now as silliness, but I'm pointing that out because it has been an issue in previous games, and it has been an issue in Vanilla Civ 5, with certain approaches just being too much stronger than other approaches to the point where there's not much strategy applied. You just do the cookie cutter every time.
We have religious city-states, which give you faith per turn, and you have mercantile city-states, which have access to unique luxuries.
I'm wondering what this quest system is going to be about. They talked about how all city states will use the expanded quest system. So, I mean,
they're just saying it's going to be a little more complicated than if you get us a great leader, you'll please us. You know, I mean, that's how it is in Civ 5. I'm sure that what they're saying is that they'll want you to do something a little more complicated, a little more difficult than that.
Yeah, I'm imagining, like, some sort of, I don't know, analog of the old event system, event and quest system in Civ 4 BTS, where you would have to get, what is it, you know, whispering horses or something. Well, not with, you know what I'm saying, like, you have to build a certain number of stables, that sort of thing. Yeah, horse whisper, yeah.
Yeah, well, they're talking about quests here, not events.
What's going on is I think what they're saying is that some cities will have multiple quests that you need to do. It'll be a spread along all the cities. Like, the first person to get 50 faith will earn the favor of that city-state.
A better position, your influence must increase or something like that. I mean, if you're the first to generate 50 faith, I mean, how do you get city-states on your side, well, how is that reflected in the game? Well, your influence increases. Are you friends? Are you allies? Are you closer to being friends, closer to being allies? Both.
We're going to talk about something that's less heralded from this expansion, but I think equally as important, and that is the revamping of diplomacy and the inclusion of espionage. Now, if you remember, espionage is almost just an afterthought. In Gods and Kings, they're going to go back to the way spies used to be used for very specific stuff like rigging elections and surveying foreign civs, creating unrest, stealing technologies, and infiltrating cities, you know, and the sort of stuff that you used to be able to do in Civ 4.
Yeah, the rigging elections thing, by the way, from what we have seen, is with regards to city-states. There's a screenshot where it talks about your spy, and he's been successful in rigging the election in the city-state, and now not only is your influence greater with the city-state, but the influence of other civs with that city-state has gone down. Similar if you went down the social policy path of patronage, presumably.
For the actual like, stealing of tech, are you spending gold? Are you spending 5 points? Are you spending something different?
I'm not sure, you know.
I don't think that's clear, actually.
I think what you do is you stick, from what I understand, you stick a spy into a region, you know, a civilization, and you just tell them to try and steal technology, and at some point they'll say, aha, I found something of that nature. So they're basically just agent provocateurs inside that civilization.
One of the official screenshot where it shows three different spies. There's one that's in one of your own cities conducting counterintelligence. There's one that's in a city-state that's rigging the election, and it's not instantaneous, so it's going to take 5 turns. And then there's another spy of yours that's in another Civ city, and it says surveillance 2 turns. Then he talks about, you know, surveilling cities, stealing advanced technologies. Maybe you have to be surveilling a foreign city before you're able to steal an advanced technology, but who knows at this point?
That's an interesting thought.
There was a passing comment I read, I think it was on a CSC thread. You're presenting a lot of ifs here or something to the equivalent, and well, that's the stage that we're at, but that's the fun. But what if we take what we know from the screenshots and we start to extrapolate? I mean, there are already threads, I mean, super sleuthing on the 2K forums and screenshot analysis on CSC that have dozens of replies and hundreds, if not thousands of views already.
Well, if you want an idea of how spies work, I guess you could think of Master of Orion 2. You send off spies and you keep some spies and hey, you give them vague instructions of what to do, what goals to go with, and eventually either they'll get caught or they'll report some sort of success.
Espionage does not come around until the Renaissance. From the Hokuto article, once you have access to spies, which happens during the Renaissance era, you can use them to invade your opponent's city, steal technology, and even start revolutions.
Why do they make you wait in the Renaissance? They did that in Vanilla Civ, too. Like,
well, here's the thing, is that, one, the classic spy that was born around that time, if you think of the Medicis, but also, I know it's a little coincidence, you know, religion loses its effectiveness during the Renaissance, while spies begin. There has to be some sort of connection there. I can't see it, but should I start singing Losing My Religion now?
Bothers me because people perform spy-like roles in on the Civ scale anyway, basically throughout history, or at least throughout known history.
No, I think of spies said, look, we learned how to do the wheel.
Yes, I understand. Like, people were sneaking into cities and inciting revolts and convincing enemy leaders to do stupid things.
That was really common. There is espionage before the Renaissance. We're not saying it starts in the Renaissance. We're talking about spies. Trained, classic spies. And during the Renaissance, spying became an art form, among other things.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's ridiculous that you can't really train a spy unit in any capacity until the Renaissance. Certainly, the Renaissance should allow you to have more options with spying, maybe make them more effective, etc. I don't see any issue with that. To acknowledge how important that era was to spies.
Spy technology before, you know, you had bards that would pretend to be playing music, but would also be listening in on conversations, that sort of thing. In the Renaissance, you started having a leap in technology, and one of the technologies that they started was espionage. Just ask Estio the Auditori. Okay, I'm kidding.
Fair enough. I just think it's silly that you have to wait until the Renaissance to train spies at all.
They're revamping diplomacy, which is also always a good thing.
from the press release, it says being able to establish embassies with your rival civilizations.
And that's probably where you can have your spies hanging out for the most part. Embassies were not something that you had before the Renaissance. So that could be the historical justification. The first true embassy were by the Germans in 1625.
Later in the game, diplomacy is to be influenced by policy, specifically order, autocracy, and freedom. There's a thread on 2K that's trying to combine all of this with official discussion and screenshot analysis all together. Missionaries can help spread your religion, thus making diplomacy easier for you but harder for others. This is from preserved by Zephyr. And then going to war with cities that share your religion gives a penalty, it seems, but the just war belief can help counterbalance that, if not outright negate it. And just to refresh, what was that just war? Oh, yeah, plus 20% combat bonus when near enemy cities that follow your religion. So, yeah, we're trying to treat each one of these components of the expansion, talk about them independently, but, yeah, they bleed through. There's interdependence. There's a kind of that juxtaposition where the quote from Ed Beach about, well, for two-thirds of the game, religion is really there, but then it kind of tapers off. And then the Cocteau article says, then you get spies, or then there are spies, and starts talking about the Renaissance era. So the argument is that there must be some kind of gameplay connection.
Well, you're going from outright warfare, you know, you have a different religion, I'm going to declare war on you, to a more silent, invisible war. Religion becomes less important. It becomes more a factor of diplomacy modifier, much like it was in Civ 4, in which they would say, you have the same religion as me. I like you better. When you hit the Renaissance, people stop becoming overt about their attacks and start getting more subtle and start trying to steal your technology and cause unrest in your cities, you know, rather than just taking a siege engine and whacking it several times and bring your army in.
I can hear the Civ 4 veterans being concerned about just how deeply entrenched religion is going to be, especially when it comes to diplomacy, because it was really powerful in terms of you're on my good side or you're not on my good side, and instantaneously, like, you know, the turn you meet, oh, you're a different religion than I am, automatically negative just because of that.
Well, that's how it is in the early game, though.
Yeah, I think it's just the concern for some Civ 4 players. Is it going to be like it is in Civ 4? The structure of religion is going to be different when it talks about being like a fully customized religion. You choose this pantheon, you choose this belief, and then that's your religion's belief in that situation. But then how similar is it going to be from Civ 4 in terms of diplomacy? I mean, of course it makes sense that you would have, as it even talks about here, that you're going, it's going to be negative in terms of diplomacy on the religion basis. But it's just how strong is that going to be relative to the other things? People with Civ 4 in mind like to keep the good things about religion without bringing in this kind of overwhelming feeling of, oh man, religion is ruling the day, even before we got, say, the Apostolic Palace for the religious victory. Even if you exclude that entirely, it was so powerful, and that could be either really good or really bad, despite whatever else you did or didn't do.
There are 9 new civs, and 5 of them have been either announced or semi-confirmed. We have the Netherlands, whose ruler is going to be William of Orange, and you can boost the profitability of the wetlands and ships that can steal gold from port cities. You have the Celts with Boudica, who gains extra faith for building cities next to forests, and they train Pictish warriors. It's described as a move of 2, a strength of 11, and 2 unknown unique bonuses. You have the Mayans, Tikal the Great. They'll have cultural bonuses tied to calendar. The Byzantines, they can buy a bonus 6th belief. And Carthage, they haven't announced their leader, but I'm going to guess it's going to be Hannibal. If you don't have Hannibal versus Caesar, then there's something wrong.
Not exactly wrong if you don't have Hannibal against Caesar, since, you know, Hannibal died before Caesar was born, but I don't know. I mean, I like the new Civs in there. I hope that the Zulu are going to be in there just because I feel like that's a Civ cluster, but we don't know that yet. But one thing is that since Lisbon has been shown to be a city-state, people are guessing that Portugal won't make it in as a Civ this time, and people are saying that maybe the Zulu won't either because they don't really fit in with the Gods and Kings theme. I don't know about that.
I think it was a Korean city name. It was a city-state, and then they had to change it once Korea was announced as a DLP, that they had to change the name. I mean, that was about the time that Quebec City was introduced, for example, that it was a renamed city-state from something to Quebec City because they introduced another Civ as a DLC. It's interesting to know who the leaders are, but I think it's more interesting to find out what the other 4 Civs are going to be and what their abilities are going to be. I mean, yes, it's interesting historically, but it's kind of more interesting in Civilization 4 with Civs that had more than one leader, because that leader would have different traits that they would bring to it, whereas In Civilization V, yes, the leader is tied to the Civ and the Civ is tied to the leader, but not in the same way.
Well, we can only speculate.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Zulus have been, Lisa brought that up, and that has been discussed in the forums for that exact reason, that the Zulus are a classic Civ for Civ, thinking back to the original Civilization and Shaka. Just briefly on buildings, because there's not a lot to say. Apparently there are going to be 13 new buildings. 5 of these are likely unique buildings for the 9 new civs. Others will include an embassy, likely a tract of faith buildings, and perhaps a kind of spy-related building. Other buildings, like the temple and monastery, seem like to have been reworked to fit with religion. It would be weird if those didn't bring in faith for you. This is some commentary by Zephyr on the 2K forums.
Now, here's the thing. I wonder if some of the original religion buildings, like temple and all that stuff, will be reworked in terms of culture so that you'll have, they'll supply less culture, but they'll supply more faith.
It looks like it's probably indeed going to be the case. I mean, the religious buildings will probably give you some sort of faith along the line. I mean, the only reason why they provided, that much culture in the first place probably was because there was no real cognate for what even temples and monasteries did in the
aside from keeping your people happy.
Yeah. But, yeah, I would be really surprised if those buildings didn't give you religious points.
I just want to see if someone calls their religion the atheist religion, they'll have atheist temples and atheist cathedrals and atheist... It'll be very interesting to see how they justify that. We come every Sunday to not worship God.
Hey, you don't know what they're doing there.
Like bingo.
why don't you call them video game centers? Like, on Sunday, we go to the video game center and worship our god, Sid. And,
I can't think of a segue to this next thing, but so...
What is the next thing?
I'm just going to say that there is not a segue, and that, in effect, becomes a segue. The new units, there'll be 27 new units in all... looks like, and this is from screenshot analyses, some sort of World War One tank, machine guns, the Pictish warrior, the presumed Celtic unique unit, World War One era biplanes, World War One era triplanes. A German article mentions a great admiral.
They have naval sieges now as well, in which there are two. They split it up. They have boats that are now, or ships that are now more specialized in naval combat. And there are now ships that are specialized in attacking land units. They're increasing the effectiveness of the navy with regards to attacking, and more flexibility, and also that it's a little bit more useful in that you can now directly attack land units with them.
And you can also be able to launch raids on coastal cities, capture enemy ships. Interesting, in addition to the units tied to that, of course, is combat. But from the press release, says that the reworked combat system, where the AI places more emphasis on balanced army composition, and along with that, units, as observed from screenshots, I guess, units now have 100 life, not 10. Though it's unclear exactly how this affects combat, it is likely going to make the outcome of fights more predictable due to more precise rounding of damage.
There's also, not only is the health going to 100, but also skills are going from counting in tens to 100.
Well, that's going to be consistent.
Yeah. They're also going to include a new futuristic unit called Robotic Spearman, which can take out tanks with one shot.
May or may not be confirmed officially at this time.
They haven't really, but maybe if 2K listens to this, they'll say, you know what? Let's have that unit.
Well, hey, we got giant death robots, so...
Recorded for episode 111.
Leaders' reactions to the heat. This thread was started on Cifanatics by Ms. Ross, MZROJKS. And this person defeated all the leaders in a settler game, all 20 of them. And took a screenshot of each civ that she defeated as they were brushing feet. So the first up is Alexander the Terrible of Greece. He or he gives all
professional
level, yeah. I don't know. It's men, but then all of, you know, most of the players are guys, so, yeah, anyway, it's pressure.
Lisa, I'm just making sure the rest of us are listening to what she was saying, I think.
Yeah.
they divvied this thing into four parts, and so you can see each one. Where do you guys find any screenshots from the first part? Kind of terrible. Like, I don't know. I like it looking at Augustus Caesar. He looks very sad.
I like that Alexander actually asks you to treat his subjects with mercy. After the way he behaves the entire game, he, of all the civs, he asks that. It's just, wow.
I find it funny, too.
Catherine's smiling.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty much the favorite of ever, all the guys.
Yeah.
Mackie, I don't think it's her smile. But anyway.
Yeah, I know. But her other assets. Her assets are excellent.
The other person ranks on the specificity level in terms of how sad you're feeling that you have, in fact, defeated this person based on what they said, how they said it, and their visual reaction on a scale of 1 to 10. And right now there isn't anyone that's a 9, interestingly enough. But it started at the low, for instance, at Bismarck with his back to you. And right up there with the Siamese leader, or Rami, because at least we can pronounce that, sympathy level of 10. But Haroon also has a similar message about, you know, having destroyed, I'm paraphrasing, destroying such a great cultural civilization, for example, that you denied the world this from now on. Okay.
There's no hell, though, no love for Montezuma here. He calls us a monster. That's awesome.
I love the Montezuma one. I mean, he just looks like a crazy in all of his animations, really.
Yeah, they really put a nice touch on him in Civ 5 in terms of, like, how he looks and interacts in the game.
Yeah.
The Genghis one with his hands behind his back, I also thought was an interesting touch.
Totally. There's no dagger behind his back or anything.
You can turn away now. It's all good.
Yeah, everybody is always looking down or to the side.
Yeah, they can't even look you in the eye, seriously. Poor Ramses of Egypt looks like he's not.
Yeah, he's my favorite. He's insane.
I don't know, just the way he's sitting, it looks like he's got a bit of a gas issue. But anyway.
By my beard and belly.
Recorded for episode 129.
This probably won't come as a surprise to any of my co-hosts. Things I learned about the world through Civilization 5. So I'm going to present something that's been a while since this has been presented. I have a top 10. And, yeah, just because people want it. I know they do. There were 246 suggestions. As of this recording, there was a similar thread for Civ 4, and I'm sure I did the top 10 for that as well. So, the top 10 things learned about the world through Civ 5. And number 10, there was a year numbered 0 AD from G.G. Moyen. Shah Jahan II. Said, my history book is wrong when it says that societies were built around farms. Rather, farms were built around cities. Number 8, from XRW175P6MQ4, I think my battleship just got sunk, maps from one country are completely unintelligible to people from another country. Kind of tying into what we talked about before, about not being able to share maps. Number 7, from Babri, after researching ironworking, few civs realize that there is no iron nearby. Number 6, there is no internet, says the king of Big Oz. Tabernak. Number 5, time is not like a long and smooth river. It's more like a stair with big steps in the beginning and very short steps at the end. Number 4, from Bathurst, when a country is about to lose a besieged city to their opponent, signing the deed to a neutral country will immediately catapult the enemy hundreds of miles back to their own lands. Number 3, also from G.G. Moyang, you can make your people starve to death to make them happier. Number 2, things I learned about the world through Civ 5, a smart leader will sell off all his possessions to a foreign country before declaring war on it. From Debrel, And the number one reason, the number one thing I learned about the world through Civ 5 from Civ Oasis, all nations that ever existed were founded at exactly the same time.
Recorded for episode 134.
Speaking of brilliant moves, a certain question that someone asked recently, was it a serious question or not a serious question? Reporting live is Mackie.
This one, yeah, over on Sif Fanatics. This guy who looks like he just registered back in August is like, do girls play Sif? Because it seems like most of them are guys. No, girls don't play Sif. That's why I'm not on Polycast. That's why we didn't do a special about the very thing.
Yeah, basically, guys, this is how it works. If it's not The Sims, and it's not an MMO, it's dark, and an MMO, only a quarter of them are actually girls. You have to be careful, because a lot of them are just guys looking for you to give them stuff and playing with women.
That's actually true about the girls in the MMOs. It's true.
Mackie's actually a guy.
No, I'm not a guy.
She's using voice manipulation software to sound like a guy.
No. Those not animals dancing on the mailbox. Those are guys. I wasn't the guy accused you of playing
with a girl, I am a girl. People don't know that, but I am. I just have a speech. I've been casting on YouTube a long time, and I always feel a little bad when someone addresses me as a he.
Too much smoking in bourbon, huh?
Yeah. Well, especially the bourbon. But yeah, smoking plays a role as well, and it can cause results.
Oh, yes. I forget who it was somewhere in there. Hey, if we put in My Little Pony and turn the corporations to Gucci and Louis Vuitton and Prada, that's a guy, girl.
Didn't you know that? Well, the number one demographic for My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, is like adult males. They're called
Jabronis. You're supposed to get more guys playing.
I've got an idea how we can get more girls in the Civ. We can add an expansion that's all about pandas.
What?
World of Warcraft Pandaria. It's a new extension. It's for real. It's for real.
My God. You got all the girls going, oh my God, pandas so cute.
Yes.
Yes.
Or just civilization calling The Sims.
And, reading in the thread, somebody pointed out that, I think the reason you don't see more girls is because of the tics or the get the hell out thing, and yeah, that kind of doesn't help. Because as soon as you say you are, tics.
Well, we don't really see guys either, which is a good thing. It's mostly sex.
Yeah, that's for all
I think it's actually all aliens, for all aliens. Girls don't play Civ, boys don't play Civ, just aliens.
So actually, I'm just a psychopath, not an alien, but I'm still a girl.
And the number of girls playing Civ with you directly relates to how much of an idiot you aren't.
Yes, thank you. Yes, you post things about the My Little Pony and those other mods, and I'm not playing with this guy ever. So enough people pointed out in this show that there are women who are known to be playing, who are in the Hall of Fame and things like that. So yes, girls play Civ. We play other games too. You even find girls playing shooters sometimes, believe it or not. I know the ratio is a lot lower. But...
pissing match.
What?
We're trying to argue the best female player later on this thread.
Yes, I saw that.
That's actually an interesting question for our Saturday games. Has Lisa overtaken Mackie in predictable outcomes score? I think she might have.
I don't think she's been in enough, really. I mean...
Oh!
Trying to defend! Yay!
I'm not Lisa's advocate. I would say that, I saw her in a game where her score was up with Phil.
Yeah, that was... I had to correct that, but... Yeah, that was close for a long time.
Farming over their cottages, Phil.
I like to representation specialists with biology. Is there anything wrong with that? So what if it just happens to artificially inflate my score?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's only fair that we give a shout-out to Duckstab because he was the first person to directly mention Polycast post-7. Come on, guys, are you forgetting Polycast has almost always had two regular female co-hosts? Not to mention the 2007 EXO Special Girls Playing Civ. Mathematically wise, almost always that's not true, because there have been three seasons where there was only one female regular co-host, and only two seasons where there's been two regular co-hosts. But still, the fact that...
It just takes some time.
The fact that Polycast came up directly, alluded to, and that the person actually mentioned a four-year, almost a four-year-old special, that just brought a smile to my face.
Sounds like this.
It's legendary, come on.
Yes, yes it is. Indeed, not only is the concept of girls playing Civ legendary, but so is this show, because, again, we are 5 years old. The show is 5 years old, it's now in school, and it's throwing temper tantrums, and keeps asking why.
Why?
Yes, why? Why did you bring this all back? Why?
Why? Why do you make me get up so early?
Why are you mad?
I'm really obsessed with people, but
why are you jelly?
Jelly? Why are you mad?
Why are you jelly, a girl's playing sip, huh?
Recorded for episode 136. Yeah, they made the higher difficulties a little more challenging these days than they did on release.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things, is that when you're, like, you know, a few weeks into the game and people are already beating it on deity in less than 200 turns, probably could skip the difficulty, but... Because, you know, the lower half of the difficulties almost no one ever uses. I held a poll once, and out of 100 people, no one played below Prince. So if you shift all the difficulties so that everything is a little bit harder and people can drop down a little more, then you get a wider ranging spectrum, and there's always somewhere up to go. I think it works out better.
I have not conducted a similar poll, but just anecdotally, I would say, yeah, that's consistent with what I see, that you really don't see people talking about any type of strategies or expressing any concerns on anything lower than Prince.
There's not too much even on Prince. It is the really high difficulties is where people seem to be challenged. You know, whereas you look at previous releases, you'd get people coming onto the forum saying, you know, I'm struggling at Noble or Warlord, and, you know, and I need help. Whereas I think, you know, people are now sort of saying, oh, I need some help to beat Emperor.
Yeah.
But, the difficulty range is sort of shifted up.
Yeah. And basically, the lower half of the range is just filler. No one plays on those. Except maybe if it's your first time on the game. But anyone who comes to the forums or visits any of the stuff that we're participating in plays on generally Prince, King, or Emperor. Those are the three most popular difficulties.
As you noted in the chat, the Emperor is likely the most balanced difficulty level. I will concur with that.
I agree. I like Emperor. It's the one I've been playing on for a while. It's not, probably could do fine on Immortal as well, but on the higher difficulties, I feel you have to rely more on exploits that the human player can utilize well and the AI isn't good about, as opposed to better strategies. I mean, there's a difference between, like, you know, using some sort of, like, trading 5,000 gold, immediately declaring war, versus actually having a good war strategy.
Oh, come on, trolling the AI is a valid strategy.
Trolling is always a valid strategy. No, that's a good point, though. And a lot of the success in high difficulties in every Civ that I've seen the ability to play at least a decent level seems to, at least to some extent, to set the AI bonuses up in such a way that you're using it against them, or you're finding a way to screw them over other bonuses. On D&D Survive, the most common way for me to see it's for players to relieve them of their gold supply one way or another.
Yeah.
They usually have plenty of and don't spend to the degree that they could.
Or a very effective way to cripple them because they don't handle happiness well is you take a bunch of cities, and they're mostly trash cities, so then you give them for free to some other AI, and it cripples that second one too. So you've killed off one and crippled another. And they don't anticipate the amount of happiness they're going to need to accept these gifted cities, and so as a result, they end up, all their production and everything drops to near zero.
I've always been afraid to try that, because I'm afraid that, like, okay, this guy has like 5,000 gold, he's just going to buy Colosseums everywhere. Do they actually not do that?
No, they don't. The AI does not use gold. I mean, for example, an AI that's trying to go for a diplomatic victory, and they're all pissed off because you've got all the city-states, and they're sitting on 15,000 gold, and they don't buy any city-states, even the ones right next to them. So, yeah, they don't use gold very well.
Yeah, imagine saying that they don't like to use it because it inflates the army, because it's gold factors into strain.
Even when you remove that factor, they still don't use gold. There's something underlying it, which I've never been able to identify when looking through the files. Probably something in the game core.
That's crazy, too, though, because gold is such a central element to gameplay. More so than, maybe Civ 3 was comparable. But that's the only other time where I've seen gold be such a heavy factor in the game.
I agree.
Compared to the raw hammers in a lot of cities, compared to everything else. Like, in Civ 4, you never, it's like, oh, how much gold can I get so I can buy a unit? And, yeah, a little bit sometimes. But it was never such a dominant consideration.
It's just inherent
in it. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that, but the bad part with that is that the AI isn't using it properly when it's a core element of doing well.
On the next episode of Hoarders, Artificial Intelligence and Their Obsession with Gold. Mind it, shiny.
The way I look at it, I think the AI should have a target gold to go at, and that target depends on situations. Like, if they predict that there might be a war starting soon, then they should save up some gold. But if they're being defeated in a war, then they should set the target very low and spend more gold. So it doesn't seem to quite do that as well as it should. Especially if they have excess gold and they built all the buildings they need in all their cities, they won't spend that spare gold on city-states, which is what a human would do when you got nothing else to spend it on. But they don't do that, so yeah.
That would be hilarious. They get in a fight with each other, like, instantly over city-state bidding war. That might be why the developers chose not to do that and made only some personality built for them. Because I could see that just leading to war every single game between an AI.
It'd be realistic. It'd be what humans would do. You try and buy up all the city states from your competing human opponent, and, you know, they get pissed off at you because they're trying to buy them off too, and so it ends up in a war. That's what happens.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, if you get too many AI wars, all of a sudden there's no threat to the human, and the
human
warfare.
That's true. Especially since the AI, military level AI, is identical by definition between the two, so they follow the same tactics and same strategy and end up stalemating most of the time. At least nowadays.
Unless one side has quite a serious advantage. Whenever someone says late spring in a press release, usually interpret that to mean May.
Yeah.
Or if they have a delay, they'll say, well, we meant early June.
Yeah, well, we meant quarter two.
They're probably at the late beta stage for this downloadable content, so.
When we talk about Gods and Kings late spring, that is for the PC, but then there's also people out there who play games on their Mac.
Yes!
Photoshop is not a game.
Emperor.
The announcement from Aspyr, I mean, it was on this, I think more or less the same day, actually, I think the same day that Gods and Kings was announced, but Aspyr says, where is it here? It will be released soon after the PC, quote-unquote. Oh.
Oh.
Ooh.
Soon after,
so we can expect
that means 1 year and a half.
Ouch. That's,
Why is it, think you could write programming language plus the way that it automatically.
I don't think Mac owners really care anymore because they have the dual thing where they can play, do Windows on their Mac, you know, so it's not that big a deal for them. Just same thing with Linux players, you know, they have that compatibility so that, you know, this isn't exactly, you know, Crisis we're playing, you know, it's just Civilization.
I tell you what, for the next Civ title, it's not going to be written for the PC, it's not going to be written for the Mac, it's not going to be written for Linux, it's going to be written in Flash, you're welcome.
Yeah, free to play? Why not?
Oh, wait, that's Civ World.
God, no.
Oh, that's on Facebook. But anyway.
No, still Civ Fire. Still Civ World with Fire, please.
I mean, it's nice that Civ has been, you know, one of the few games that are almost always, you know, available on Mac. Okay, yeah, people can use dual boot, but when they do, I mean, it takes up, I don't know, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I mean, you know, Civ is a pretty intensive game, you know, in terms of its demands on your operating system and on your computer, and it doesn't really help if you're dual booting up. So it's nice that they're coming out with a Mac version for this. Yeah, it's good for those Mac users. I mean, there's still quite a number of people who do
yeah,
play.
They just got BioShock, I think. So. I want to see that in the commercial. Yeah, we just got Peggle. Woo, Saber, what's it called? We're awesome. We just got Peggle and Friends vs. Zombies.
Oh, no, I think they have it a little bit sooner since it's Java-based.
Yeah, I was doing
yeah, humor I know,
with exaggeration
there. Yeah, but I know, but I can't help myself.
That's the more extreme.
Extreme civilization.
Extreme. Well, I could go over a couple of the UI things that came out in the accidental release, which is the topic coming up next.
We know some things that are at least in testing right now that may very well be fully realized.
Yeah, so Civ 5 actually came out with a patch 1.0.1.558. So that was actually not supposed to be ported to Steam, but it happened. And so 2K Greg writes, hey guys, earlier today I built a Civilization 5 that was meant for our QA department, mistakenly got released as a patch for Civ 5. We have since rolled back the patch, sorry about getting you all excited, but this thing definitely needs more time before we release it. Good. And those of you who did fire up the game during the accidental window should consider yourselves treated to a sneak peek of things to come. Of course.
Hopefully that means being able to shut off that stupid opening cutscene.
Yeah, that is definitely.
Yes, under interface options, there is an option to skip the intro video. Was observed.
Frankly, I'd rather have a static loading screen than that thing over and over and over again.
There is a static issue also shown.
You know, the thing is that they have it committed to memory. They can hear it in their sleep. You know, it's like they know exactly when. During that cutscene, they'll be able to get out of it. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, come on, say that word. Okay, good.
Yeah.
You're stuck in a moment, and you can, in fact, get out of it. Notice I did not sing.
They also added a couple other things. They added the wonderful new thing of multiplayer animation. They also have, they have multiplayer quick combat and quick movement. So you can choose to, you know, skip the movement animations or the combat animations if you want. In the options menu. But, you know, if you really like seeing fights and seeing the animations and you don't get tired of it, then by all means, that is available to you. The last UI change that 2K mentioned was that I'm not sure what this means, but it says the UI has been redecorated slightly to look a little less Art Deco and a little more Baroque. Which I wasn't an art history major, so I'm not sure. They do have more, I don't know.
Fullness, open.
Yeah, like curly things. I don't know if they're there before.
When you say something is baroque, you mean it's sort of like dark and I'm trying to use my words.
Art Deco has more straight, clean lines and things. With baroque, you'll get more of the kind of curly cueing and things and stuff.
Right. Baroque means more tense and more, you know, it has that drama and tension, you know, while the other way around is sort of like more open, more, you know, less expressive.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know if that would be the first thing. I mean, I feel like most of the UI changes are mostly on the art end rather than anything like to speed up the player's experience. Oh, well, I mean, except for the opening scene thing.
The definition for Baroque, by the way, is the Baroque is a period of artistic style that used exaggerated motion and clear, easily interpreted details to produce drama, tension, exuberance, and grandeur in sculpture. So basically, it's less artsy-fartsy.
Art Deco is not artsy-fartsy, in my opinion.
What I'm just saying is that it's less exaggerated art.
Yeah.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Daniel was a guest host on TD Gaming Podcast, which is gamingpodcast.net, filling in for Paul S. Nowak. And it just so happened that it was at the around the same time that the expansion was announced, so it actually gave him something to talk about. We made sure that he had to talk during the episode because he was threatening that, you know, he didn't really know what he was going to say, but of course he found things to say.
Apparently I'm an authentic Paul substitute.
Yeah, at one point I want to have you both on and see if you can do a snark-off.
We have come to the end of a very news-tastic episode of podcast.
News-tastic. X-Tree, read all about it.
Or listen all about it.
That's true. So, outro.
Oh, yeah. Get us out of here before they start singing again. This is the Polycast episode 141. We have been joined today by our four regular co-hosts, Masalua.
Wait, former regular what?
I'm sorry, no, I said it's a four. It's four.
Whoa.
I'm not a co-host anymore. I just signed that down.
Let the wars begin.
Yeah, I meant our four regular co-hosts, starting with Mackie.
At least he didn't say he was dead. I mean...
Oh, well, yeah, it could have been worse. That's true.
Yeah, he was in the podcast, but he just died 2 seconds ago. That's why we're wrapping up the podcast.
Anyway, yes, so goodbye, Mackie.
Yeah, we have Mackie, I think. Is she dead? Yes. You're not fired. I didn't know that. Dan, you?
Holding my breath until spring.
Still Blue, for the main team.
Faithful followers.
Myself, and we are joined by our guest co-host, Jonah Falcon.
Can I sing Losing My Religion now, or...?
No!
No!
Denied!
Jonah, I thought you learned. What you do is you ask for forgiveness, not permission. That's how it works. How do you think I've been able to get away with this for 6 years?
Oh. Try to make our own music. Let's just get out of here.
Oh, okay.
Leave the building now. Bye!
There, I made my own music. You're welcome.
Oh, no.
Request fulfilled. Thanks, Lisa. Appreciate it. I'll be there for music now. Do. Yeah, very excited.
Yeah. Why don't you repeat what you said so that we can edit it out? It sounds like you came back again.
Really?
Repeat it again, because you were talking about it, but you were talking.
Yeah.
Okay. You will break that.
No, that's what I'm trying.
I do.
You think your connection is slowing down?
All right. 1 sec. We're basically saying the expansion will be supported.
Stop. Take a breath. You're breaking up again.
I don't know what's going on today.
It's my fault. I'm supposed to suck up bandwidth. I'm draining the internet.
Oh.
You put that back, young man.
There is a tube.
I stole me some bandwidth. Yeah.
Oh, whoa. Actually, Jonah, if you do that a few more times, I may get some authorization to sing.
It doesn't work that way, Taryn. Did we mention this already? Like,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, well, we have a comment. The Nian team says, it's Civ 4's implementation, which was actually good, except for how strongly it affected diplomacy.
I was just saying it there because I didn't want to interrupt you.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you cut that out and we'll pretend that this contribution from the listeners. And if they don't pick your question, you're a total loser and you should just go away.
More like if you ask something I don't want to answer.
Oh, sacked. And that makes it true. Episode 141, done.
I could have been done with less singing, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, could have been.
Definitely about 90% less.
What I like about Lisa's statement is we'll be better with 90% less. That means that there still is room for singing.
Yeah, I was about to say, I was thinking 100% less was a bit better.
Thanks, Lisa.
Good job, Lisa.
Okay. We need to have better cliffhangers. We need to have something like our next episode. We get to find out whether Buddha's going to keep her baby or something.
What is this, a soap opera?
It's Laura, baby.
It's extreme.
And they found out that she was a man.
Dude looks like a lady.
Wait, Mackie wants us to sing her.
No. I do not want you to sing that.
Oh, observation.
That was a request. Come on. That was the title.
That was not.
All right, pity the poor people who have to listen to this live.
Recorded February 25th, 2012. Civilization 4, 5, and World Soundcliffs. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.